this is what I'm really excited about most about J5 and our more current venture, the partnership with United Way in the Social Impact Lab, is, again, if we're solving problems with a design mindset, that isn't poster design. You know, that isn't graphic design. We're talking about designing companies. We're talking about designing business model, designing partnerships, designing solutions that are sustainable.
Welcome to Cross Pollination, episode 13. You're listening to Cross Pollination, where we are here to plant familiar ideas in new soil. Our guests are original, creative, and bold. They've typically done something differently from other people in their fields and gotten interesting, sometimes unexpected results. I'm NB, and I'll be your host. Cross Pollination is a member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB. You know you've heard it. Design your work. Design your life. What is design all about, and why does it matter? This week, Kelly Shaw joins Cross Pollination. He's design director at J5's Social Impact Lab. J5 is a design and innovation consultancy in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. On Cross Pollination, we talk to a lot of guests who created something new with the goal of solving a problem, whether it's a new business, tool, product, or service. Design thinking is a method to solve problems, to consider them in depth, understand deeply what's important to the people with the problem, and invent possible solutions, test them out, prototype them, refine them, and eventually deploy a solution when it's reached a stage where it seems solid. Design thinking has been around for decades now, evolving along the way, and it's seen special interest in relation to solving wicked or complex, multifaceted problems. A lot of companies incorporate it in creating new products, and it's now so widely used that some critics complain it's overused. Nevertheless, there are still many regions and many industries where it's still very new, and there's a lot of room to apply it in solving problems creatively. That's J5's sweet spot. Kelly talks to us about J5's work in helping companies and organizations reinvent what they do through design and about how J5 collaborates with social innovators to attack wicked problems. Kelly kicks things off with Spotify, his favorite example of good design.
One thing that I'm very, very delighted with is Spotify. What I find amazing about Spotify is, one, its immediacy, of course, but it's probably the best experience I've had yet around any sort of automated curation or recommendations. And it's like, my God, like, where was that band when I was in high school? And I'm not nostalgic for that, but the amount of music that's always been out there that you just, there's no way you would have ever heard it. All that music was out there, but you were limited to the way the music industry was bringing you. So I'm not at all concerned with personally that, you know, the glory days of the music industry are not what they used to be, because that in those days they weren't serving me that well.
In the best cases, good design thrills the people using it, and it solves problems similar to the way that Spotify has for music listeners. Kelly came to design and innovation work via print, digital media, and online collaboration platforms. Like many people, he believes that right now, as with Spotify, designing for consumers is where it's at, but not necessarily where it could be. There's a lot of room for good design that would lead to people using products more widely, more effectively, and more happily within and between businesses and organizations in the business-to-business space.
It's interesting that the consumer is the ultimate measuring stick, right? So, you know, there's a lot of design branding cachet around Apple, and a lot of narrative that they don't consumer test or they don't talk to their customers. At least these are old narratives. And it was all about the mystique of their mastery. But they test drive everything. They got so much data. They know everything that's happening. Of course they're listening. And so I think that I've always seen tremendous opportunity in the business to business space. And I wonder why it isn't designed better. There's a lot of awesome opportunity there. And even in the, if you can design extremely well for your customer, why don't you design extremely well for your employee? I helped to do a human resource information system. We're just doing a sort of vendor selection project. And what was amazing was all the competitors that were interested in securing this business, Their candidate modules for hiring and recruitment were the best designed. The other modules, which is all part of a suite, were not designed. And so it's fascinating that you can design for a prospective employee, but that you stop designing once you've hired them. And so there's tremendous, and there's quite a good movement around the employee experience now. More and more organizations are realizing that, and things are coming along. This is maybe folklore, I don't know, but gentleman that started Slack, he was stunned when he got into Yahoo and saw what employees face. He couldn't believe it. I guess he'd always been his own sort of entrepreneur and run his own stuff. But when he saw inside Yahoo's corporate culture and what the employees are given, he was blown away. And that was the birth of Slack, which is awesome. The resourcefulness around that, you know? Yeah. Which is also another, you know, pretty well designed, tool.
Incidentally, Slack's inventor, Stuart Butterfield, also believes there's huge collaboration opportunity and therefore design opportunity in the B2B space. But what's all this designed for, and what does it do for organizations in helping them solve problems in new ways? According to Kelly, that secret was outlined way back by a classic management guru.
And so that's where I love a quote from Peter Drucker, who says, a couple quotes. One is, the purpose of business is to create a customer. And what I love about that, of course, is it's simple, and it doesn't have you thinking that the purpose of business is to create a profit. That's a byproduct of creating a customer if you're profit minded and you're good. But the purpose is to create the customer. And the next quote that I love to grab a hold of is by Drucker that says, there's only two functions that matter, marketing and innovation. And so, now lots of people conjure up different ideas of what marketing is. But to me, it is that design sensibility that says, where's the unmet need? And if we see there's an unmet need, then we need innovation in order to meet that need. And so again, very, very simple.
Looking at it from that perspective, design is intimately important to business as a way to innovate and create something new, create something that has value. Companies innovate for a few reasons. They do it to stay competitive, to become more so, to take advantage of opportunities and grow. They do it by creating new products and services, revamping internal processes, or changing their business models. Design helps them get there by getting into the right mindset and offering tools to imagine what those new things could be, what they could look like, and then to invent them. Here's Kelly and J5's approach to the process, where they examine and evaluate innovations through three lenses: feasibility, market desirability, and viability. They tie in closely with understanding customers' needs. Before we get to that, a quick message to let you know that this podcast is brought to you by ATB Financial, which is on a mission to transform banking by making it work for people. They do this through their customer obsession and by innovating at the forefront of robotics, AI, blockchain, and the future. Visit atbalphabeta.com to learn more.
There's three lenses or three points of view that we do our level best to bring together into the one Venn that rules them all. And that is, you know, you've got a lens into what's desirable in the market, and you've got your lens into the viability, and you've got your lens into the feasibility. And so these three lenses are core to design thinking for me and for J5, in that there's all kinds of combinations and permutations of those three lenses. If you bring together feasible and desirable, you could have a venture that isn't viable, but everything you create might work just fine, like the Segway or whatever. So it works. It's very feasible. Some people desire it. The founders desired it. But that's not what we're after. You know, we're after all three, or you can have such, and I see this in enterprise a lot, particularly around software. You can buy viable software, feasible, and not get any adoption. So that's why you got to meet your customer. You got to know what's desirable. You got to know. And in early days of J5, we did a lot of cloud discovery for IT departments, and that cloud discovery was to sort of show organizations how many cloud apps are being used, and how many, you know, inevitably most of them were not sanctioned by IT. And so when I saw that sort of landscape of cloud apps that surround these official apps, I just see human nature. I see people taking the path of least resistance. If Evernote works better than OneNote, then people use Evernote. They just adopt it. And so, to me, that was very telling, and I loved that it showed humanity at its best in a way, just being resourceful. We're past that now, but it was still formative when we saw, you know, essentially IT departments buying software that people were struggling to adopt. And so that was an affirmation for us around the value of these three lenses. When we go into exploring the unknown, we don't mind moonshots. We like knowing that there'd be money if we solve it. We like knowing the desires or the unmet needs are there, or the suboptimal conditions are there, but we don't want to overthink feasibility too early. And so a moonshot would be not considering feasibility too much at the beginning.
Another way that J5 puts it is that their work involves helping companies and organizations start their innovation engines as well as their execution engines that are already running.
We like to sort of talk in terms of you've got your execution engine and where's your innovation engine? And that's what we pitch our services into, is how an organization could set up an innovation engine. And it doesn't have to be overwhelming.
What happens when a company is trying to create something really new that hasn't been done before? Something that might take significant resources and effort, where there's a lot of uncertainty and risk about how it might turn out. Maybe like those big moonshots Kelly talked about. And it needs to find out if that new thing is valid and has legs. One way that design can help at the start is through stories and metaphors that allow people to relate to a very new, possibly risky idea through something more familiar. That helps get willingness to get people on board, get things rolling, and test out those new ideas, prototype them in different ways. It's then easier to evaluate the value of the idea once it's been fleshed out and tested, and it becomes less uncertain and less risky. Other cross-pollination guests have talked before about the importance of experimentation to find out what's going to work. This is where experimental rubber hits the road.
In simple terms, you know, many business people that are focused on optimization and incremental change are very much focused on reliability. And reliability gets companies to massive scale. There's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with that. But reliability never invents anything. And so to get in an inventive space, you can only speak in terms of what might be valid. And so if you're looking at an idea that's never been tried before, that's not reliable. It's only potentially valid. And so the problem with validity is it can only be sort of proven through future events. So business needs to be patient in the innovation engine. They don't have to be extremely patient, but the people that are most uncomfortable with looking at the appreciation of qualities is an underdeveloped sort of mindset, I think, in the business realm, at least around these parts.
What Kelly's talking about is appreciating qualitative characteristics related to new inventions when they're at an early stage and their value might not be easily understood through numbers by quantitative analysis, which businesses are often more comfortable with. That's an idea from Roger Martin, a leader in design thinking, formerly Dean of Rotman School of Management at University of Toronto. And it's an idea that has pretty significant implications for how businesses can innovate and solve problems, and for how design methodologies can help when they're looking to make a leap and can't rely on solid quantitative data.
But I think that, you know, you see evidence of people getting it, because in order to sort of get people into that validity headspace, you have to tell a story. Okay, so I've got this business idea. So think of it this way. It's the Uber of dry cleaning, right? So that way you can get your head around the business idea pretty quickly because you know the Uber story already. And so that's just a really simple, kind of silly example of the types of stories that appreciation of quality side has to go with in order to get that patience, in order to get some funding, in order to get some roadmap, some runway to get those prototypes up and running to the place where they are looking more reliable. And so being a creative person and being a design-minded person, I'm not that interested in incremental improvements in any organization. There's lots of mastery there. And certainly things can be redesigned to work better on that front. It's just not game-changing enough or not big enough to sort of float my boat.
In addition to companies in the public sector, J5 works with the social sector to apply design in finding new solutions there. It's recently opened a social impact lab where it's working with the United Way, a national federation of nonprofits that funds and supports programs that benefit communities, address poverty, and support opportunities for kids. The lab gives a pretty practical example of applying design methodologies to develop solutions to existing challenges and create a physical space for different groups to come together and create them.
So we have children and youth mental health initiative in the social impact lab right now. And we've been looking at it based on a study that United Way did commission locally. And the output from that study is an actionable report, but not unlike a lot of other reports that, runs a risk of collecting dust on the table if we're not, you know, really leaning into it. And so the sort of primary finding in simple terms of that report is people that are seeking mental health supports, particularly if you're sort of in the mild to moderate area of acuity, it can be quite difficult to find the appropriate supports and that are available to help you. So it's boiled down to sort of an access problem. And so this access problem can be defined as navigating to supports and then make, you know, success being you've navigated to an appropriate support, and further success, that appropriate support has capacity to start helping you. And so now when we look at youth with, periodic depression or anxiety, we can understand that. We can relate to that. We know it's not necessarily a slippery slope to worsening conditions, but we don't want to take any risk. We want to be able to get in there and help them. Statistics show that it's a fairly large percentage of the population. So there's a problem we're solving there. But they're very elusive. It's very hard to find these people in order to meet them, in order to observe them, in order to understand their real needs and start to design for them. And so, you know, quite frankly, I've been banging my head on the wall on that for a while, and just recently had the epiphany that, in many cases, these youth, they don't go directly to a service. They go to the natural supports around them when they are ready. And those natural supports are family and friends and coaches and teachers and faith community, and peers and, anyone in their social network. And, they don't go there because they know that support has the answer, but they are, they sort of ask for help first there. And that layer in the system is not elusive at all. So we're all potential natural supports to youth. And so that's just fantastic, because we're like, when we had that realization, which might be obvious to some, but when we got it, it was something to just grab a hold of. And it's, we can design for that natural support layer, and we can meet these people, and we can understand what their challenges are when they're helping youth. And so we've just released a challenge on our digital platform on that topic, looking for stories from people that have been in that role and starting to gain some insight from them directly. That's one thing too with the social sector, very system minded, and often quite a bit of angst over the dysfunction of the system, which is fine. But the part that J5 brings is really the design and the design thinking component of that. So, again, let's not optimize a broken system. Let's design things that work for people in need.
Collaboration is key to J5 Social Impact Lab. Here's Kelly describing what that could look like.
The United Way is great at running corporate campaigns in their fundraising cycles. These corporations are asking for more engagement, and they're asking for a higher cadence, some of them. And we're very capable of doing that, specifically through the lab. I think another area that's very interesting is these corporations, They have corporate social responsibility or purpose organizations within them, and they're filled with awesome people with great talents and great intentions. But they're would also, you know, benefit from getting out of their building and sort of coming into the lab and meeting other people that have the same ambitions. So, you know, your podcast theme and concept of cross-pollination is very much aligned to how J5 thinks and the lab thinks is, we're very interested in having diversity and people coming together.
The Social Impact Lab is also very practical. It has specific objectives, and as J5 moves to a larger space overall, it intends to create an environment that helps take people out of their familiar surroundings to encourage thinking differently, and where its enterprise and social sector clients can meet.
The other thing that I find really refreshing about our pursuit here is the lab has success criteria and the lab has its goals, but it's not going to succeed in spite of anyone else. Like it's completely open and completely collaborative. We depend on others, but we don't want others to fully depend on us. You know, there's no competition is what I'm trying to say. You're going to co-create with people that need something new. And when you do that well, I don't know, you're not really competing with anything.
If you'd like to find out more about J5 and design, you can find them at J5JFIVE.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, you might also enjoy Creative Block, our fellow member on the Alberta Podcast Network. You can find them and other network shows and events at albertapodcastnetwork.com. If you'd like to comment on this episode, you can reach CrossPollination at crosspollination.co or at Pollinata1 on Twitter. Join us next time for a show with a guest who's been an entrepreneur, an intrapreneur, who learned her best business lessons from living off the land, and who believes that rebels are organizations' best hopes for their futures. It's unexpected in all the best ways. Thanks for listening.